comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth, thank you for being here at Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. I had a good time today. Now, I had a very busy day, and I hope you had a great day today as well. It was a very busy day. However, in the afternoon, I was a guest on someone else's show, and Aaron McCollum's show. He has a show that, let's see, it's called Universal Truth Evolution. But anyway, he has a show that he broadcasts each week, and so I was his guest. I got to be on the other side of the microphone today. And I always enjoy that, but I especially enjoyed being with him today. He's been a guest on this show. He asked some great questions. Also, the audience had some great questions. And it was just a lot of fun. So I would like to welcome all of you who were at Aaron McCollum's show today. And you didn't know anything about me. You didn't know anything about this show until today. And you decided to drop in here and check us out tonight. Well, thank you and welcome. We're glad to have you. Tonight, we're going to be doing something a little bit different than we normally do. You know, normally, we either have one guest for the whole 2 hours or we have no guest at all, which, like last night, no guest. Just a topic that we discuss. But tonight, we've got two guests, and we'll split the show in two parts here, maybe three parts. But because of some scheduling things, we needed to get both of these folks in here. The first guest tonight is someone that I mentioned last night. Now, if you listened to the show last night, you heard me talk about this this report coming out of Egypt that the dean of the Department of Egyptology Faculty of Archaeology, Dr. Shaheen, had the report said that he had said that there is something in the Great Pyramid that is not of this world. So that's what we talked about last night. And part of the information that I used in last night's show came from an article written by Douglas Mefford. Now, because of time, it just wasn't possible for me to get in touch with him in time for him to be on the show with us last night. I tried, but we just didn't connect up in time for him to be with us last night. But he did call me today, and we had a chance to chat just a little bit. And so he's going to be my first guest tonight, and I'm delighted that he is with us. He's standing by on the telephone line, and we'll bring him on in just a bit. But I'm delighted he's with us. He's been a freelance writer and journalist now for about 40 years. So we get a chance to talk with him about this article. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away.
Come on.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said before the break, my guest is Douglas Mefford. And Douglas, let me just welcome you to the show. We're delighted to have you.
Glad to be here.
Douglas, you wrote this article that I used. Now, I don't know, did you get a chance to see or hear the show from last night?
Sure did. Appreciate the access.
Well, you're certainly welcome. So you heard, you know, the part of the article that I used on the show. And since you heard the show from last night, you understand the track that I was running on, which is, if this thing turns out to be true, this is earth-shaking. This throws Egyptology in the dustbin. And they have to start writing whole new textbooks. Now, you used that information really as part of a larger article. And I think we need to tell folks, if they happen not to be familiar with you, you write articles about a lot of different topics. You're not just about UFOs and extraterrestrials and things like that. And you were using this as part of a larger article that really had a different point. Go ahead and tell us about this article and the point you were making there.
Okay, well, the main thing, when I first ran into the article here, it didn't really have, you know, the first post, and
I said nothing.
Okay, I'm sorry. When I started to look for stuff to write the article on, I come up on the web and this was everywhere. So I started looking, I read it. Most everything was the same post and not enough meat in it to make an article in itself. But it was a good lead-in to another thing about the anomalies around the pyramids at Giza, and the fact that the academic insistence that they are burial chambers of the pharaohs is just totally bogus. They're just too much different from the pyramids as opposed to the way this culture treated their dead. And so, I just made a few points. I mean, there are people who have written entire books about this, and I couldn't fit all that in one article, but just brushed over a few things that would point out the anomalies, such as the way, you know, the Egyptians, they painted pictures of everything, everyday life, how they hunted, how they took care of their animals, cooked food, did their linens, everything like that, all the way up to the way their royalty did with the people, how they treated their enemies and the like. And yet in the entire kingdom over thousands of years, there is no picture did they ever paint of them building this great big huge monolith out in the sand. You know, the fact that, you know, if it were a burial chamber, one of the things about their culture, all those little pictures and the hieroglyphs on the walls of all the tombs that they found down in the Valley of the Kings, this is basically the Book of the Dead. It is the instructions to the deceased spirit on how to act in the afterlife so that they don't run into trouble and they manage to get where they're supposed to go. Very blatantly missing in the Great Pyramids. It's not there. And this is something royalty, people who could afford it, would get all this stuff painted on the walls around the sarcophagus that hold their body. Even the poorest person, before they were thrown in the hole, would at least have a small papyrus scroll taken with them in their where they were buried so that they would have their chance. And that's just gone. You know, it's not there. The big rectangular box down in the bottom that they say is a sarcophagus, you know, it's always been empty. It was empty when they first got down into that chamber, and it's not shaped right. it's not a place for a body. Don't know what went there, but you know, these are just things that kind of stand out when you just sort of study archaeology a bit and you think outside the box instead of just marching along and accepting what you're told, is that it just didn't make sense that these things that are normal within their culture for how they do their dead just aren't here in the pyramids. So you start looking for what it might actually have been. Now,
what do you think it might have been?
I mentioned in the article, you know, can go over there. Once they discovered the clay tablets over in Samaria and the like, and had a few people finally work through to be able to translate out the cuneiform text, there was a very enlightening in story about this pyramid and the like from way before the Egyptian culture, because the Sumerians were there first. In fact, it was, you know, people from Samaria that ultimately went over and helped with the civilization in Egypt.
Who do you think built the pyramid?
Goes over the in biblical terms would be called the pre-Adamic race that was on this planet. They are more commonly known amongst people who study this stuff as the Anunnaki, a race of aliens that had come into the solar system really even before our planet had finished forming and sort of basically took up residence here.
Now, you used this this article, this information, in your article sort of as support for what you were saying, which you've just described to us, about the bogus claims in standard history related to Egypt. Where did you find this article? Where did you find this information?
Oh, the one about the...
About the professor.
Well, after we talked, I went to tracking down through a bunch of the different websites and blogs and forums that were carrying them, and it just kept linking back to All News Web, and seems to have originated from Michael Cohen, who owns that site.
Mm-hmm.
So whether this is true or false is most likely going to land at his doorstep to find out whether he just made this up or not. I was reading over on Above Top Secret earlier several threads where some people think that Cohen is probably the worst thing that could ever happen to ufology, and others that think he's great. I have noticed since then, even one that, you know, UFO Digest that I look at a lot reposts a fair amount of Mr. Cohen stuff. I don't know if their problem with him is that he seems far-fetched, or the fact that he also has a sight and claims to be a psychic as well as a ufologist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't had time to really keep digging and digging and digging to find out just exactly how credible this person is.
Well, let me interject something here.
Sure.
If he had written this article in this fashion, if he had said, a noted professor of Egyptology recently said this, then I would have... I would be suspicious of it.
Yeah, it's what.
But when you name a guy and tell his position and name the university, you have opened yourself to something we call lawsuits, if that is not true.
Yeah.
And so by naming this professor and saying what his position is at Cairo University, you know, if that's not true, if he just made it up, but he uses a real professor's name at a real university, that opens him for lawsuits if this isn't true. So, therefore, I think he must have some pretty good evidence, some pretty good testimony. Plus, he names one of the delegates, Mr. Marek Novak, who, by the way, folks, all the way through the show last night, I kept calling him Kovac. It's Marek Novak. So now we have two people named, and if this is not true information, then he could be sued. And I have seen quite a number of articles written by Mr. Cohen. He writes a lot. I think he would well know that you can't do this unless it's real. So I'm persuaded that he has a source that has given him this information, and he's relying on that source. Because he's, in other words, from Cohen's point of view, he's saying, okay, this really happened. And I think he's relying on a source for that. And otherwise, he would not have named these two people. Now, you're a writer. Let me ask you, if you were just going to make up a bogus story, would you name real people at real universities?
Oh, no.
I wouldn't either. So, and I've tried to get in touch with Mr. Cohen. I have not been successful. I don't have his telephone number, and I've been trying to track that down. But if I can get in touch with him, I'd love to have him come on and talk to us about this. Now, I asserted something in the show last night that I said would be a clue and a little test. I said if Dr. Shaheen actually said what was quoted in that article, if he actually said it, then Cairo University will not comment on this. Because if they come out and say he didn't say it, and then a group of eminent scientists poke their heads up and say, well, yeah, he did. I heard it. That discredits Cairo University. So they're not going to do that. But if they do come out with a statement that Dr. Shaheen did not say this, then it's probably pretty safe to assume that's the truth. Because the risk of saying that he didn't say it is very high. If in fact he said it. What do you think about that?
Well, it was through the fact that names were given and the like is why I went on and used it as the lead in to the article. I've looked through myself and looked back on some of the other stuff that I've done in the past and realized that articles that have been reprinted from Mr. Cohen and All News Web is stuff that I have used as a source and reference for other things too, and have not really found anything wrong with it. So personally, I think that somebody's going to have to do damage control because he just slipped up. I mean, he was talking about architecture, and you know, I'm sure that talking to architects that you know they're going to know that we do not have the capability to build something like this that's the height of a 42-story skyscraper, but a whole lot wider, and that he mentioned something that he might have been aware of, because there have been a lot of digs and research around the pyramids the last few years that the results thereof don't seem to be made too public. You mentioned on last night's show about that one small tunnel that they sent the little robot up in.
Yeah.
You know, there also have been excavations trying to dig in under the Sphinx to see if they can find that room of records that Casey had talked about years ago. That, you know, according to, you know, his predictions from way back when was, should have been discovered, I think it was in the late 1990s, you know, with this wealth of information that should be able to help mankind out, but somebody's obviously sat on that. I've studied a lot of Casey's work over the years, and, you know, where they documented just about everything he did. You know, you can make fun of him if you want, but he did tend to have a rather astounding accuracy rate that they documented and can be shown. So, you know, whether they, you know, whatever they found, somebody's keeping wraps on it. The Egyptians, best I can tell, have been a lot more, you know, keeping the archaeological digs around there a lot closer to the chest than they used to, and trying to control what is done, what might come out of it, and the like. So somebody in this guy's position could well be aware of things that they have found that hasn't been made public, and he might have just, you know, said it thinking for a moment he was just talking to some, you know, architects, and then suddenly the room explodes into a what?
Yeah.
You know, so that's when I guess he suddenly realized that he had probably put his, you know, foot well into it, that he started backpedaling and trying to get vague and not say anything, sort of on, you know, the idea of, oops, I said something I shouldn't have.
Well, I think all of us have had those moments in our own lives where we've said something that as soon as we said it, we were shocked that we said it. And it was like, wow, I can't believe I said that. And I'm sure this is one of those moments for him. But I'm fairly convinced that this actually happened, that he actually said it. And as I detailed last night, I'm pretty convinced it really happened because it uses a real name, a real title, and a real university, and it names one of the other delegates. Somebody in that group has talked, else we would not know about it. And so now we've got two names. Two people can sue him if this is not a true story. I'm pretty sure it happened.
It's got the ring of truth to it.
All right, well, listen, I want to thank you for being with us. Stay on the line with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back after this break, so don't go away. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For this part of the show, we have another guest, someone you're familiar with, and it's my delight to say, Ed Grimsley, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Oh, hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Ed, you have, since you were on the show with us last time, I know you've been working on a lot of projects. You've been working on projects related. Some projects are not related to night vision, but you've been working on projects related to night vision, sky watches, and so forth. I wanted to get an update from you and find out if you have any sky watches coming up in the near future.
I do. If the weather's a little touchy now, it's close to home. I have some down in San Diego that we go and put on by appointment. People have actually flown me out to Fort Lauderdale and Didham, and in Puerto Rico, Texas, and recently Minnesota. And they also helped me to get a white-tailed deer hunt in. So.
Oh, well, that's nice. Now, you said Puerto Rico, Texas?
No, Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay. And in Texas. Yeah. Okay. I thought you said Puerto Rico, Texas, and I was going to say, you know, I was raised in Texas, and I don't remember there being a Puerto Rico, Texas. However, I do remember Adam and Eve, Texas, and I remember Possum Trot, which today is now called Red Oak, Texas, and a lot of different strange names of towns in Texas. But Puerto Rico, Texas, I had not heard of. So you've been to Puerto Rico. How did you like it?
It was pretty good. I thought it was bad in California with a cop on every corner, but they have red light after red light going down the street, passing you, and they're just busy, busy, busy. So I think they write a lot of revenue out there.
Yeah. All right. When you're in Puerto Rico, you did the Skywatch. Were you able to see some UFOs there?
Yeah, there were some pretty good UFOs. In fact, we did one over at what's called the, I think it's the Celestial Highway.
Okay.
You know, I'm a little weak in the mind some days, but we did one out there. And they actually have a large balloon tented off about a mile up in the air, floating all the time. And they use it to help for contraband being smuggled in. And possibly, I suspect that it's there to maybe also do a guard over what could be an underwater base off the Celestial Highway out in the ocean.
Okay, now we've heard quite a bit over the years. We've heard quite a bit about the possibility of an underground base there in underwater base there in Puerto Rico. Did you see any UFOs coming up out of the water or going into the water?
I saw two go into the water that appeared to be about 50 to 100 miles out. Mm-hmm. They traveled in from deep space and was dropping in closer and closer and angled out to where they just glided right out and down to the ocean. I didn't see them splash, mm-hmm. but I saw them at the angle they were going, and it appeared to be a water landing.
How many people were with you in this Skywatch?
At that point, there was, just overall general?
No, at that moment.
At that place?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there was two of us at that because we had to sneak to the location and climb through some wooded area and get out to a forbidden zone.
I see. But now, what would have happened to you if you had been caught in there?
I don't tell anybody that, so.
Yeah, we'll keep that a secret, just between you and me.
Yeah.
Now, Ed, what would have happened to you if you had been caught in that zone?
I think they probably would have took everything, including my life. But it was an area that no one is allowed there, and there's cameras, things floating in the sky about a mile up that's photographing and scanning a lot of things. But we had a niche, and we found out an area that we could probably go into. And then after that, we became brush bunnies.
I see. All right, so now when you were in Puerto Rico, what was the largest number of people you had at your Skywatch?
We had about 50 people show up at one time. And we put it on for several nights. And, you know, some nights we had like 50 people, and some nights we had 25, and sometimes people couldn't find the new site where we went, and some would get there late, some would get early, but all in all, we had a lot of activity, a lot of sightings.
Now, what was the reaction of the people when they looked through the night vision goggles and saw UFOs? How did they react to that?
Oh, they would do things like, I knew they were there. I knew they were out there. Those are real. Those aren't satellites turning and moving. And one speeding up and chasing after another. And, a lot of those comments that you hear, they had them there. There was a couple of people that didn't speak English too good, and I didn't speak Spanish too good, so they got to look, and I tried to give them a little lessons and show them, and it worked out. They were happy.
Mm-hmm. The reason I sort of keyed in on Puerto Rico is because we have heard stories from guests who have been on this show. We've heard stories that there is an underwater base off of the coast of Puerto Rico. We've had one guest that told us that he's been in that base. It's a U.S. Navy base, he says. Now, I don't know if... look, I'm not saying that I think the guy's lying. I'm simply stating a fact. I haven't been in that base, so I don't know if it's actually there. But we've had a guest who has told us it is. We've also heard about a lot...
I have a tendency to believe him.
I'm sorry?
I have a tendency to believe him because we had some people that were very special there that told us about where and how and what. And
they told you about this underwater base that the U.S. Navy has?
Yeah, some people knew it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they communicated with us and some people went, guided me to it.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I couldn't see under the water, but I saw some UFOs go in.
And they went in the vicinity of this naval base?
Right. In fact, they came in from pretty deep space, made a deep angle, and then shallowed out over the ocean. And kept descending, so I'm pretty sure there's something going on out there, or a couple of UFOs crashed in the ocean. Somebody should go look.
Somebody ought to go look.
They need rescuing.
Yeah. All right, now you, when you left Puerto Rico, where did you go?
You mean from when I came back?
Yeah, when you left Puerto Rico. Where did you go? Where was your next sky watch?
I did one in Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And then just before Puerto Rico, I did one in North Carolina. And I also got to be thinking I did a conference in Arizona. And then most recently I did a thing in New Mexico that people were very private, didn't want to know, nobody to know, and I went and put one on there, and they had like 10 special friends and guests, and they had an amazing time, got to see a lot of stuff, good stuff.
Okay, so you've told us about a bunch of places you've been. Puerto Rico is one of them, and then all over the United States. Ed, have you found a place?
Just did one in Fort Lauderdale, and then also out in the Everglades, two nights.
Have you found a place, Ed, in the United States where it's more UFOs, or it's easier to see them than any other place, or is it all pretty much equally the same?
Well, there's some places that are very hot spots, and you can see a lot of activity. And you can see some stuff come in and from deeper space and orbit around the Earth. You can see things in some areas, like in Wisconsin. I mean Minnesota. When I just came back from out of about four nights, we saw heavy-duty activity, and even got to see some stuff that was moving around, and knew this one area. There's a one night out of the month where all these cattle moo and beller and act disturbed, and we were trying to get to the location to find with night vision, and we never made it to the private ground and area to it. But they were just like an amazing amount of mooing and carrying on, and it's
you were positioned where you could hear it.
Oh yeah, you could hear it for a long ways, mm-hmm. for miles, and so we're actually planning on one person is keeping a log on the nights that they do it,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to try to figure out, and we're getting some location details. And we may even try to get in with the rancher's permission, or we might have to go night vision walking for several miles. But we did see some items above the area that were flying around, like type of orbs.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to get close enough to figure out who they were, what they were, and what the connection with them and the cattle were. So that's more research in for the future.
How big were these orbs?
Well, I would say from what I could tell that they looked maybe the size of a mini Volkswagen or a Mini Cooper.
Mm-hmm. So they weren't tiny. They were pretty good size.
No, they're big enough that somebody could be flying them. Or I don't know if they're going down cutting any parts out of the cows or anything, or having a ceremony, or
mm-hmm.
taking DNA, or what they're doing, but there was definitely something going on. And we've seen some of the same size.
We have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My second guest this evening, is Ed Grimsley. Ed, when we went away for break, now we had been talking about this this area. You had been telling us about this area where the cattle on certain nights would get very agitated and very loud, mooing and bellering and so forth.
Almost like they were being in pain and carrying on,
mm-hmm.
and like a 100 or 200 of them all at the same time.
Have there been reports of cattle mutilation in that area?
I don't know. I was thinking about trying to get a hold of Linda Moten Howe and ask her, and I've just been so busy trying to note up things and get information. And one of the people that was in the Sky Watch that told me about it and brought me there or close by, I was going to try to find out more about it. And from her ranch or her property, it's probably 3 miles, maybe 4 miles to this place. And it's back end where you don't have any real access roads other than the rancher's gate, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to try to make contact and talk to him about that. But from her housing, excuse me, I got the hiccups here. In the process, I think she's going to try to get a hold of the farmer and communicate and ask him if there's been any mutilations and things, and try to find out what is there or if we can go in there. And so it appears that at least one or two nights in a month that will happen.
The orbs that you saw, were they in the direction of the ranch that has those cattle?
Yes. They were coming from further away, dropping down slightly, and actually looking like they could have been going down below the tree level out in the distance. And I've seen these same type of craft off of Highway 5 on going south around north of Bakersfield. I've seen them two different times. Once there was two in a group, and another time there would be three. And they look like as if they were bumblebees buzzing and flying back and forth, and they'd rise way up into the air and just dive back down like they're doing aerobatics,
mm-hmm.
and entwine and just fly next to each other and maneuver. It looked like they're just having a good old time. And, you know, or if you've seen a couple of swallows chasing bugs. And they're just as silver as can be. They almost look like a ball of mercury. And they can move unbelievable. 1 minute they're near the ground, scooting along at 400 or 500 miles an hour. And next second they're crossing each other and zooming up into the air and going 1,000, 2,000 feet up and then diving back down and twisting and turning. And I think it's what's making crop circles as well, because this was in the Sacramento Valley and it was near where there was crops.
Yeah, because you know there's a video out there that somebody took several years ago in England, where he caught a couple of silver-colored orbs over a field, and in a matter of seconds they had laid down a crop circle. And in this video, you can watch them do it. And
I'd like to get that video.
Well, that's on YouTube. That's on YouTube. That's where I saw it.
Well, I'll have to try and find it, or if you can find it, let me know.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find the link to it. But it was, this happened several years ago, and pretty incredible video. In fact, I had Patty Greer on as a guest, and she used that video in one of her documentaries.
Yeah, I know Patty. I pick on her every time I get a chance to see her someplace. She's a very smart and talented person. She interviewed me once in Laughlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, she probably burned the footage, but I'll have to talk to her and see if she's got the footage.
Yeah. Well, she certainly has it in one of her videos, one of her documentaries.
Okay.
Yeah, she used it in one of her documentaries. And when she was describing it, I said to myself, "Yeah, I've seen that. I saw that video." But it's pretty incredible. So, do you think these are craft, or do you think these orbs, these silver orbs, are living beings, or what do you think they are?
Well, they act like they're living beings, but I believe they are probably piloted or flown by some kind of beings or aliens or a spiritual craft, and that they just attached to the craft, maybe, and thus how they control it is like part of their own feelings, or maybe there's intelligence inside that can maneuver these things better than any helicopter ever could.
Mm-hmm.
And well, the three that really impressed me was the ones the second time down by Highway 5.
You told me today you wanted to give us an update on your project to raise money to send the host of the Kevin Smith Show home to Thailand. We're almost out of time for this segment, so let me give you the opportunity to give us an update. Where are we?
Okay, well, we have almost enough money to get you the tickets. We might be $50 to $100 short. I've had several people tell me by email and that they were going to send me cashier check, money order, or something to your behalf, and I've told them to either send it to you or send money order so we keep record of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just hasn't been enough to really get the job done, because we get the ticket, we got to get you the transportation, the travel, you got to be able to have money with your family, and you already know that. And then it's going to cost a little money to keep things afloat on the show back home. And if you can do it from Thailand, or if you have your helper work with you out there, it's going to cost money. And as of right now, we're definitely too short to send you. And I've got almost enough to get the ticket.
Well, let me tell you, we have enough for the ticket. We have enough for the ticket, but it's the rest of that stuff that we don't have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a computer that you might be able to use over there, but until I send it to you and you check it out, I don't know if it'll work or if you can put the show on from Thailand. So I don't know what that'll cost for one. And as far as the ground cost... I've never been to Thailand, but someday when you're rich, maybe you'll take me. And I know that you can't go there for 2 weeks and not take your family places and spend time with them. So I want to encourage the people to give some more support that we're very near, but not near enough on getting that other in. I think we're possibly $1,000 short the way it goes.
Yeah, but something like that probably.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got my money sitting here ready to go, and you got some, and we just need to get the people to respond a little more. And it really I thought there'd be more, and several people called and said they were going to send something. They were going to send it, and it never came, unless they sent something to you.
But well, that's why I said, you know, we did get some in, and with what you've got and with what has come in, there is enough for the ticket. But it is about $1,000 short of what it will take for the trip. But I'm sure the people that told you they were going to send it to you, I'm sure they're going to. And,
right, but, you know, my thing is, there's 3 million people out there. And you, this is my personal feeling, you dedicate yourself to the show. You dedicate to them. You sacrifice some of your family, and now this is an opportunity to get you home for a couple of weeks and make your son happy and your wife and just be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the people ought to get loose, kick something down, even if it's $20 a person or whatever, that can help. I know we're having rough times.
Ed, I want to thank you. I do appreciate what you're saying. I do. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to step away for break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My thanks to both guests tonight, Douglas Oh, man. I'm going to have to put his name right up here on the screen. Mefford. Douglas Mefford. See what happens, folks, when you get old like me, you forget things. I want to thank Douglas Mefford for being with us tonight. I want to thank Ed Grimsley for being with us tonight. And I want to thank you for being here. We're doing something tonight that is different for this show, a format for the show that we've never used before. In 10 years of broadcasting, I've tried just about everything. This is a format I haven't used before. What we're going to do is over this next 20 to 30 minutes, I'm going to be talking about some information that is out there that's important information. And then we'll open up the phone lines and allow you to give us a call and talk to us about anything you've heard here tonight or something else, as long as it's within our genre. NASA put out a little press release saying, an announcement really, saying that tomorrow they are going to have a press conference. And they will discuss a study that's being published at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For our listeners around the world, that's 1900 GMT, Universal Time. So the information that is in this study is being kept a secret till then. This is not entirely out of step, out of character with the way NASA releases information of some kind of breakthrough, but it has spawned, quite predictably, it has spawned a flurry of blogs on the internet where people are speculating that NASA is going to announce that they have pardon me, discovered life out there. And in fact, today when I was on Aaron McCollum's show, there was a question about that, and you know, my answer then is my comment now, and that is, well, NASA's already discovered life out there, and they've been embargoing that truth since the 1970s. They discovered it with the Viking lander and on Mars, and then they said yes, and then they quickly backed away and said, oh, no, that was a mistake. So they ran another experiment. The first one was designed to detect biological processes. The second experiment was not designed to detect it, and of course, it didn't detect it. So then they said, oh, you see, that experiment shows there's no life. Yeah, they found life, and they found that they're, according to their chief biologist, and we have a recording of it that you've heard me play on this show, they found 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than, and this is a quote, than we can account for from all known sources. 15 times, not 15%, 15 times more oxygen than we can account for from all known sources in that atmosphere. So they've persisted in telling us there's no life over there on Mars, and we're still looking, though, and they've persisted in telling us that the oxygen content in the atmosphere of Mars is less than 1%, 0.07%, that's what they say. And yet we've got their own chief biologist saying, and that's the number that they were saying back then, and we have their chief biologist for the Viking lander saying, we found 15 times more oxygen than we can account for. But they persist in telling us it's 0.07%. You go look on their website now, and that's you'll find that on their website now. Anyway, there's going to be this announcement tomorrow. This announcement is going to be published in some scientific journals. Now let's see. One scientist that has seen the science paper writes in and says, "I am sad to quell some of the excitement about possible extraterrestrial life, I've seen the science paper, and it's not that. So I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's something that, at least to NASA, appears to be a pretty big discovery, or they wouldn't be doing a press conference on it. But according to one person who says he's seen this science paper, and it's not about discovering life. So who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Maybe they're going to tell us they found Nibiru, huh? Let's see. Now that's going to spawn a whole bunch of blogs between now, between now and then. But, you know, I can't get too excited about NASA saying we're going to have a press conference, because every time they open their mouths, they tell us something that their own evidence shows isn't true. Well, it's not every time, but a lot of times they open their mouths and give us some press conference and give us some statement, and then we find their own evidence that shows what they just told us isn't true. Kind of like what I just quoted for you about Mars. You know, there's oxygen on Mars, and there's 15 times more than what they could account for. What they could account for, what that's referring to, is that 0.07%. But there's 15 times that amount of oxygen, according to the chief biologist on the Viking lander mission. I think his name was Dr. Harold Klein. Dr. Harold Klein. They told us that there's no water. There cannot be liquid water on Mars because of the fact that the atmosphere is so thin, liquid water just cannot form. It can't form. According to the official story at NASA, the way it works is when summer comes around and the ice begins to melt. And by the way, I hope you do know there are places on Mars that in the summer get up to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Very comfortably warm. But according to NASA, the atmosphere is so thin that when the ice melts, it goes straight from ice to vapor without becoming liquid water. And yet we have their photographs of water drops forming on the leg of the polar lander. The Phoenix lander. If you can't have water, you can't have water drops, folks. So their own evidence very often contradicts their own statements. And so that's why, you know, I don't know. We'll wait. We'll see tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That'll be 1 p.m. Central Time. And that'll be at 11 in the morning Pacific time here in the United States. For the rest of the world, 1900 GMT, Universal Time. So we'll wait and see. Maybe what they've got to say will be interesting. Who knows? Now let me turn attention to something else. And after the next break, we'll open up the telephone lines. The lines are already lighting up, but they shall not be answered until after the next break. So hold that thought, and after the next break, we'll answer the phones. Scientists, you hear me say on this show that scientists do some of the stupidest things you can imagine. And I am not anti-science. From my opinion, those guys are anti-science. they assume that everything out there has to be like here. And they do it in various scales. In other words, when they say we're looking for an Earth-like planet, we're looking for one where life could exist. That isn't what they mean. What they really mean is we're looking for a place where we could exist. But life can exist in virtually any circumstances. And we've talked about this before. Right here on this planet, we have life forms that will die if you expose them to oxygen. They don't use oxygen, and it will kill them. And they live right here on this planet, deep in the planet, in pools of hydrocarbon. Now, if we have life that doesn't need oxygen, if we have it right here on this planet, why would you look out there and see a planet where there is no oxygen and say there can't be life, there's no oxygen? Is that stupid or what? Now, maybe I can't live on that planet, but I can't live in the ocean. You can't live in the ocean. Should we stand on the shore and say there can be no life in there? That makes no sense, does it? Well, you've heard me talk about these things before. Well, some astronomers, the world of astronomy, just had their world rocked. A study at Yale University, or by Yale University astronomer, Peter Van Dokkum, and Harvard astrophysicist Charlie Conroy, questions a key assumption that astronomers often use. And here it is, that most galaxies have the same properties as our Milky Way. So, you know, I said they do it in scales. There you go. We're in the Milky Way. Okay, let's observe the Milky Way. Now, we're going to assume that everything else out there is pretty much like the Milky Way. Why would you do that? On what basis of evidence would you assume that the rest of the universe is pretty much like this Milky Way? What these scientists found out, as an astronomer and an astrophysicist, and what they have been able to find out using the Keck telescope in Hawaii, is that a full one-third of the galaxies, first of all, there are many more galaxies than had been previously thought, and one-third of the galaxies out there are not spirals. They are elliptical. The Milky Way is a spiral galaxy. One-third, that's significant. In case you don't know, that's 33.33%. One-third of the galaxies that are out there are not spiral. The most predominant kind of star that's out there is the red dwarf. Our sun is not a red dwarf. But the most dominant or predominant type of star that's out there in the universe is a red dwarf. Well, in looking at these elliptical galaxies, they found out they do not have the same properties of light that the spiral galaxies have. And what they have determined is that they are populated by far, far more red dwarfs than a spiral galaxy is. Now, according to this Peter Van Dokkum, and I quote, "We are seeing 10 to 20 times more stars than we expected." Imagine that. Imagine that. According to their calculation, there are 300 sextillion, or sextillion, 300 sextillion stars. That's three times as many as the scientists previously calculated. And if you want to see what a 300 sextillion looks like, write the number 3 and then put 23 zeros after that 3. And then there's this thing about, well, you know, we just don't think there's probably life out there, but there's just probably not any intelligent life. And if there was, you know, we would have already made contact. And, there's no intelligent life out there, but maybe some microbes and blah, 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 blah. 300 sextillion stars. And around those stars, there are planets. So, if only one planet orbited each star, then you would have 300 sextillion planets. But we know that most of the solar systems out there have more than one planet around them. So you take the 300 sextillion, and let's say there's an average of 4 stars around, we'll say it's an average. Some have more, some have less, but an average of 4 planets around each star. And there's 300 sextillion stars. Now multiply that times 4, and that's how many planets you've got. What do you think the probability is that there are a few really Earth-like planets scattered out through there? It would be mind-bogglingly insane to think there are none. They're there. Gotta be. Now, on top of that, let's go back to what I said about you don't have to have conditions that are like the surface of Earth in order to have life. We have life living on this planet that cannot exist out here on the surface with us. You can't exist at the bottom of the ocean. You can visit with special equipment, but you can't live there. And yet life is thriving on the bottom of the ocean. That life at the bottom of the ocean has absolutely no awareness of the immense pressure under which they're living. It's normal for them. Some of them are living at really the deepest parts of the ocean where there are volcanic vents coming up and the water spewing, or not water, but really sulfuric acid spewing up out of those vents is well over 600 degrees. You couldn't live there, but there are whole colonies of life living right on those vents and thriving there. And they are living off of that sulfuric content. That's their nutrition. You couldn't live off of sulfur. But they do. So out there in those 300 sextillion stars, and it probably is more like 1,200 sextillion planets, there are all kinds of conditions where you couldn't live. They even talk about one planet that they found. The one planet they found, they said, you know, it looked kind of promising because they were able to actually kind of analyze its atmosphere. And they said it's about 440 degrees, or for those of you who use Celsius, 225 degrees Celsius. And Eliza Kempton of the University of California, Santa Clara, is a co-author of this study. She said, you wouldn't want to be there. It would be unpleasant. Okay. That is a real good statement, Ms. Kempton. And I don't disagree with that. At 440 degrees, I wouldn't want to be there. But that's the point. The statement is, you wouldn't want to be there. But, ladies and gentlemen, you wouldn't want to be on the bottom of the ocean. And yet there is life there. Lots of it. So by saying, well, you wouldn't want to be there, a lot of people think that means, okay, we can cross that one off the list. There's no life there. I can't prove there's life there. But I can't see how there could not be life there. Under planets everywhere, under whatever conditions, no conditions seem to preclude life. Well, they have to have water. Remember those little critters I told you about that we have living on this planet that will die if you expose them to oxygen? That means you can't expose them to water, because water is, a great deal of water is oxygen. You know, it's H2O. The O is oxygen. So when you say, well, you got to have water to have life, nonsense. Nonsense. You don't have to have water to have life, not even on this planet. You and I have to have water to sustain life. The fish need water, but not all life on this planet has to have water. If that's true here, why wouldn't it be true elsewhere? See the point? So these are some important things that come in. This study that these guys did is rocking the astronomy world, because it is showing them, you know what? The old idea that universe out there, everything out there is pretty much like it is here in the Milky Way. Well, this study is proving that the only place that's like where your feet are standing is where your feet are standing. The rest of the universe did not go to the same universities as the professors. You understand? It does what it does. It does what it wants to do, and it does what it does without regard to what the textbooks say. Now, why is this important? It's important because you and I need to keep our minds open. We need to understand that scientists are just now coming to the realization that what we've been saying on this show for 10 years is true. Scientists are getting there. You know, they're late to the dance, but at least they're coming to the dance. That is important. That's vitally important. They're beginning to realize this universe is what it is. It's not what the textbooks say. It's not what the professors say. It is what it is. And you've heard me say it so many times. Whatever is, it just is. That's the way it is. It may not fit our stated laws of physics, which aren't laws anyway. They're just descriptions of our observations. But now we're observing things much different from what we had observed before. So what does that do to the so-called laws of physics? Well, it proves they're primitive and limited. We'll be back right after this, and I'll open up the telephone lines for you when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're opening up the telephone lines now. The 623 number is open. You ready? 623-444-5889. You can call that number from anywhere on the earth. It works from anywhere. 623-444-5889. If you're in Canada, if you're in the USA, I have a toll-free number. If you need to call me toll-free, you may do so at 888-223-4599. The flash message option is also open for those who are not in the USA or Canada, and you don't want to make an international long-distance call. You can still participate in the show by going to my website, Scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. Look on the right side of that picture. You'll see a link that says Flash Message, all right? Let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Puget Sound. Can you hear me fine?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Funny business with the phones this week. I don't know what's going on. Something kink in the system. But
and your thought for the evening is?
Pardon?
Your thought for the evening is?
Oh, okay. Sorry. Apologize. I'm getting an echo. A couple of things. Yeah, if we can get everybody that listens to donate, you know, just like $20 or something, that would be enough. Here's a couple ideas, though. Due to the economy, it might, I don't know how it's, it, these days it's kind of hard to raise money. But Ed, have you thought about selling, maybe selling one of your night vision goggles for some sort of a discount or something? Maybe people would want to, you figure it'd be around Christmas time, people would want to buy up those goggles for presents and stuff like that.
Well, you'll have to address that question to Ed via email. He left us about 30 minutes ago.
I can't barely hear you, Kevin. Are you there?
Ed left us about 30 minutes ago. Okay?
Oh, Ed's not there?
No, Ed hasn't been here for 30 minutes.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. I missed the last half hour, but we'll keep trying, Kevin. We'll keep trying.
All right. Well, Ryan, I appreciate it very, very much. Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to say was I wanted to comment earlier. You were talking to the guy that wrote the article about the pyramid.
Yeah.
I have read some of Michael Cohen's stuff, and you know, I'm not sure about him. He, in the past, he's written these sort of things, and they've turned out to be not true. And I don't know where he's getting his information, but he sure doesn't tell us where he gets his information. He just puts a story up,
mm-hmm.
and then when you try and get a hold of him, he won't. It's hard to get a hold of him. So I don't know where he's getting his information, but I have problems with the way he does his writing. And you know, I'm not trying to debunk anything. I just don't know how much farther this story is going to go unless you talk to the actual.
Well, and that's what I said last night. I don't know if it's true or not, but I will tell you this. When you write an article like this and you use the real name of a real person and you identify them by their title and their position at a university, you've nailed it down. You can't say, oh, I made a mistake. You've nailed it down. You've said that's the person and this is what he said. Now, if this story is not true, he's opened himself to lawsuits. Pretty cut and dried, open and shut kind of a lawsuit.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's true or not, but by using the real name of a real person at a real university, and you've even used his title so there can be no mistake about who you're talking about, it better be true.
Well, you know, that's the thing is, there are people that do just make stuff up. I'm not trying to say that that's what he did, but he's done this before. I've read a lot of his articles, and he's written many articles before using people's names. I'm surprised he hasn't been sued yet because he predicted that disclosure would happen on certain dates, that he got insider information and all this, and talked to... just numerous times he's posted articles that they seem so they just seem so different than most other articles. But what I'm trying to say is that if that's what he's doing, then he's opened himself to being sued. Then I'm surprised he hasn't been sued yet because he has a reputation for writing these really sensational headlines and making a lot of claims.
Well, in this case, look, Cairo University is like the holy of holies for Egyptology.
Uh-huh.
So in this case, by naming the dean of the Department of Egyptology, the Faculty of Archaeology, by naming that person at Cairo University and saying this is what he said, and he put it in quotes. Okay, if that's not what was said, Cairo University, I think, would be not only within their rights, but I think they would be inclined to file a lawsuit. Egyptology is one of the major money makers for the country of Egypt. And so, if this isn't real, then we're going to see probably a pretty fiery lawsuit.
It's just a matter of where do you get his information? Why would they? Why, if he said this, why would they tell only him? Why is it?
I don't know. Do you remember the story that I talked about the other night, where the lady talked about the missing pregnancy?
Yeah.
I didn't give you her name, and she hasn't been out there doing radio shows, and she hasn't told it to anybody else except doctors and so forth. So I'm in receipt of that information. She emailed it to me. I know who it is, and I'm not going to tell you. Not just you. I mean the audience. I'm not going to tell, because she didn't give me permission to use her name and asked that I not use her name. Okay? But do I have that information? You bet I do. And did it really come from this person? Well, I don't know, but it came from a person, and I do have the email, and yes, it's from my side of the thing, it's for real. The information is you know, it really did come to me. So it's not something I made up. And reporters and journalists very often come into possession of information that they cannot tell you their source. They do it on TV all the time. A source close to the president said, you don't know who that is. I mean, you know, was it the janitor?
Yeah, that's what another article that Michael Cohen wrote one time. It was last year. He wrote an article that made a big splash on the internet about President Obama met with Paul Hellyer, Edgar Mitchell, and Jacques Vallée, and they briefed Obama on ETs, and Dennis Kucinich and Edgar Mitchell passed out at the meeting and all this. I mean, he makes all these claims, and there's no evidence to back it up, so that's all I'm saying.
I agree with you, but here's what I'm saying. At the same time, the exact same techniques of reporting are used in major media every day.
Right, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
And you know, whenever a report like this goes out, think of this. If this is true, it tosses Egyptology into the dustbin. It's got to be rewritten. And that is major industry.
Kevin, anyways, I'm kind of more excited about this. Tomorrow they're going to have a press conference, and it's making a big splash on the internet. NASA's going to announce some.
I think you'll be disappointed.
It's probably just going to be something really boring, like really small molecules or little tiny cells or something, which is boring. I mean, we know much more than that. But
I think the most exciting thing they ever announced was a nebula they found that's made primarily of beer.
It's boring stuff. I get bored with it. I mean, how many times do we have to talk about Mars and the moon? I mean, there's other stuff farther out there that's much more exciting than little microbes on Mars. But anyways, I know we don't have much time left, and I know there's people wanting to call in, but if you do go get enough money to go to see your family, I think that would be great. And if you had to play some encore presentations, I'm sure people would understand.
We got Jerry Wills lined up to fill in for me.
We'll keep trying for you, Kevin. You got to get over there and see your family for Christmas.
All right.
We'll free up the phone line for the next person.
Thank you very much. All right. Thanks for the call, Ryan. 623-444-5889 is the telephone number to call. 623-444-5889. You know, I agree with what Ryan is saying about being cautious. And I think those who heard the show last night know that I was very cautious. I said over and over, I don't know if this is true. I don't know if this report is true. But here's what we can say. And what we can say is this. And so, you know, I gave you what evidence I had, such as it was. I don't know if the report is true. And I agree with what Ryan is saying about that. However, at the same time, I have to say that whenever Mr. Cohen doesn't give his source, he's not doing something that's different from other journalists. I do that all the time. In that show where I told you about the missing pregnancy, there's a real story from a real listener who emailed that to me, and I did not tell you the name. I also read part of an email from a listener in Australia, and I didn't give you the name, did I? And I won't, because they asked me not to. So does that mean, well, that means your information is suspect? Really, you think? Now, if you run that very same kind of logic, you'd have to say that Watergate and that investigation could never have happened because it was all suspect. Because we didn't learn until just at the time that the guy was about to die, we didn't learn who Deep Throat was. And yet the whole investigation depended on his information. So, think about it. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I have a NASA newsflash for you.
Tell me.
There is no intelligent life on planet Earth.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Well, I think there's a little bit. But I wouldn't. In the main, I would agree with it.
It's sadly lacking in political fields and most halls of academia, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not as intelligent as we claim to be. We're not as intelligent as we talk about being. And there's an old saying. I don't know if you ever heard it. It's an old saying, supposedly from Confucius, that a man who knows and a man who knows what he doesn't know, a man who knows what he knows and knows what he doesn't know, is characteristic of a man who knows. We have sort of lost the art of knowing that there is a vast amount of stuff we don't know. Brent, thanks for the call.
Yep.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Things always work better when the mic's on. I pushed the button. Those who are watching on TV saw me reach over and push the button. But it didn't stay pushed. It came back up. So now it's pushed and the mic is on. Yeah, look, in journalism, you can get people to give you information. In any kind of investigation, you can get a lot of people to give you information that is good information that they won't allow you to use their name. Journalism uses that all the time, and we seem okay with that. CNN reports it, or Fox News reports it, or whoever, CBS, ABC, NBC, they report something, And they'll say, a White House source, a Pentagon's, or sources in the Pentagon tell us that blah, blah, blah. But they don't use the names because they were told by the sources they could not use their names. And they report it, and you say, oh, well, okay, well, you know, that's from the Pentagon. The Pentagon says this. You accept that. When it comes to UFOs, you don't. We say, well, what's the source on that? Okay, if the person says, well, I have a source, the source wants to remain anonymous, but I was told this by a person who was present at the meeting. What else do you want? What else would you expect? If you say to me, well, I'm not buying all that stuff about missing pregnancy. I'm not going to believe that. Okay, your choice. And you say, I'm not going to believe it unless you tell me who the source is. Well, if you expect me to reveal anonymous source, my friend, you are wasting expects. When somebody tells me something in confidence, it is in confidence. If they tell me that I can use it on the air, but they don't want their name out there, that's the way it happens. Now, I have things, a lot better things to do than sit around and make up stories. But people send me email with their experiences in those emails. They tell me what's happened to them. And if they say that I can use it on the air, but don't use my name, I do. So when a writer writes an article and he doesn't tell you who his source is, we would like to know the source. I'm as curious as you. I'd like to know what's the source of that. But if that source told this reporter, don't use my name, that reporter can actually be sued if he does use the name. You understand? So, just because of the fact, and I'm not defending Mr. Cohen, I know about all the controversy around him. He's not new to me. But just because Mr. Cohen doesn't give us the source, that by itself is not a reason to suspect a fraud or a hoax. Now, I don't read tabloids. I don't. You know, I'll tell you, when I'm at the grocery store and I'm going through the line to check out and they have the tabloids right there, I do what a lot of you do. I don't pick them up and look at them, but you know, I read the fantastic headlines on the cover and chuckle about them. But, you know, some of those turn out to be true. Grant you, not many. Some of them do turn out to be true. It was a tabloid that first broke the news about the face on Mars. People laughed at it. People said, yeah, right. Guess what? Yeah, right. It was right. So sometimes, even the tabloids give you straight news. And you might say, yeah, but, you know, they put so much junk out there, it's hard to know which is straight. That's true. Same thing with major media. They put so much junk out there, it's hard to know what's straight. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that all news reporting is not straight. That means some is, some isn't. All of it, you can't say all of it's straight. It's not, even in the major media. But whenever a source gives a reporter information, you want that reporter to give you the information, don't you? That's their job. Their job is to report. When I'm given information, you want me to give you that information, don't you? And yet, sometimes the only way I can get the information is to agree that it will be anonymous, that the source will not be revealed. Sometimes that's the only way I can get that information. So when we're looking at this thing with Mr. Cohen's article about the professor in Egypt, is it true? I don't know. But I don't suspect it to be untrue simply because he doesn't tell us his source. There are a couple of things that really weight this toward it being at least partially true. He used two real names of real people, one of them being the professor, Dr. Shaheen. So he, in doing that, he used his real name. He's opened himself to a lawsuit if it isn't true. He used his real title so there can be no mistaking who we're talking about, and the name of a real university where he holds that title. Now that right there increases the possibility of a lawsuit if it's not true. So with all of that huge legal liability surrounding this article, doesn't mean it's true, but it pushes things that direction. You know, the weight seems to be a little heavier on the side of there's got to be some truth in that. If Cairo University does not come out with a repudiation of this, it's probably true. And as I stated in the show last night, Cairo University cannot afford to risk denying this if he really did say it. Because if he really did say it, there were other people at that conference who heard it. And somebody is going to speak up and say, yeah, he did say it. And then that discredits Cairo University. So, I said last night, keep your eyes open and your ears to the ground on that story, because if Cairo University just stays silent on it, then it's most likely true. Reporters don't have credibility because they are reporters. Just because he's a reporter doesn't mean that he's got credibility. We have to wait and see. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.